You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
1 Peter is not one of those letters people are rushing to quote or read all the time, but there are a number of big picture ideas packed into this short epistle. Several of these ideas got picked up by the tradition and became none too helpful dogmas, like referring to Jesus as having been on a mission to spring the pre-Christian saints from the clutches of eternal torment by descending into hell. It wasn't an idea on anyone's radar when the Nicene Creed was written, but fast forward 400 years and voila, the committee putting together the Apostles' Creed slipped it in. Most scholars agree that 1 Peter was not written by the Peter, an illiterate Galilean peasant, but by a second or third generation disciple writing in Peter's name. Why? Because of the more sophisticated Greek, an obvious familiarity with rhetoric and philosophy. The context of this letter seems to have been some kind of persecution of Christians, but not official Roman persecution. With some notable violent exceptions, Rome's official policy toward religion was remarkably tolerant. So it was probably more likely social persecution, being maligned and rejected by neighbors. The author advises the readers to be steadfast and persevere, and what I want to emphasize today, focus on the practical duties of life with patience and humility.
Our words of wisdom are from 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 5b through 6.
And all of you must clothe yourselves with humility in your dealings with one another. For God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble.
Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty divine hand, so that God may exalt you in due time. Cast all your anxiety on God, because God cares for you.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
As the U.S. war against Iran ramped up this last week, reports surfaced that multiple military commanders, sounding like preachers at some fringe Bible conference, imparted fevered fundamentalist Christian pep talks to their troops, reassuring them that the president had been anointed by Jesus to light the signal fire in Iran to cause Armageddon and mark Jesus' return to earth. And according to end times Bible prophets, including Pete Hegseth's personal white Christian nationalist theocrat, Doug Wilson, recently invited to preach at the Pentagon, Jesus' first order of business upon his return is the violent elimination of all non-Christians. According to Mikey Weinstein's Military Religious Freedom Foundation, a watchdog group monitoring religious fanaticism in our military, over 110 service members filed complaints. And not from just one incident, from 40 units across 30 installations, all reporting the same talking points. Friends, it's not paranoia. Our elected leaders have just authorized, and many in our military believe they are executing, a religious crusade. And our opening salvo was using the undisputed might of the United States military to obliterate an elementary school, killing nearly 170 7 to 12-year-old Muslim girls. To paraphrase Vince Walker, whatever moral ascendancy the United States once had is now lost. in more tranquil, less war-crimey moments. We might dismiss efforts to shrink God down to fit one political agenda or one nation's rationale for war as idolatry. But no more. What we are witnessing right before our eyes are power-hungry, racist monsters leveraging religious hatred as a tool of self-aggrandizement and empire, and soiling whatever aspirations any of us might have ever had that our country is a just and honorable city set on a hill. Now, granted, it's nothing new. It's who human beings are. We divide ourselves into tribes by ethnicity, cultures, and beliefs. We set up boundaries to define who we are over against the other. And what better means of justifying our way of doing things than declaring that God is on our side and no one else's? But I guess that's why I'm such a bad Christian. The scales fell from my eyes long ago, exposing those who claim God as their personal nationalist, a tool of empire, or anything even distantly associated with Christianity. Whatever the divine is, it is beyond any one nation, people, or religion. The Dalai Lama has written that his first commitment in life is not as a Buddhist or a Tibetan or even being the Dalai Lama, but as a human being and one devoted to the enrichment of a shared humanity through mutual kindness and compassion. And especially right now, as greedy, arrogant, unstable fools armed with the ability to extinguish all of humanity, wreak havoc across the planet, the necessity of siding with the Dalai Lama becomes all the more urgent. Regardless of how much our cultures, races, ideologies, and especially our religions divide us, we have to find ways for our common humanity to bring us together.
But God belongs to us!
Really? Christians forget that two-thirds of our Bible, the Old Testament, are Hebrew scriptures, where God comes off as decidedly Jewish. And remember, Jesus remained a Jew his whole life and showed absolutely no intention of creating a non-Jewish religion. Christianity is, in fact, a multi-faith tradition, a synthesis of Judaism with elements cannibalized from other ancient religion and pagan cultures melded together around the figure of Jesus. If you recognize the name Copernicus, you may remember him as the one who published what many already knew to be true, but were afraid to say out loud, out of fear of the church. The sun, not the earth, was at the center of the solar system. Blasphemy! Well, theologian John Hicks says that what we need today is another Copernican revolution. We need to take Christianity out of the center with all the other religions orbiting around it and put the mystery of the divine at the center, with Christianity orbiting as one of the other many faith traditions. Can we take our imperialist, our way or the highway faith out of the center? And as our letter from Peter encourages us, be on about clothing ourselves with humility in our dealings with one another. Don't forget that Paul wrote that the best any of us can do is squint in a fog or peer through a mist. All of our visions of the divine are partial and cloudy. Remember the Buddhist parable about the blind people coming upon an elephant? Feeling the elephant's side, one says, "An elephant is like a wall." The one clutching the tail says, "No, no, an elephant is like a rope." The one holding the ear declares, "Oh, it's like a thick sheet," on down to the legs being like a tree and the trunk being like a hose. Could it be that when it comes to comprehending the divine, we only have a part of the puzzle? Could it be that the mystery of the divine is far beyond any of our imaginations? That doesn't mean that our meager perceptions of God are invalid or untrue. I happen to be part of a tradition that interprets the divine through the teachings of Jesus. But Jesus is just the starting point, and the details have been evolving and changing for over 2,000 years. But a lot of people simply can't practice a faith without it being right or being the sole source of capital T truth. You know these people. You may be related to them. We certainly have our fair share here in Fountain Hills, where the Fountains has been accused of ignoring the supremacy of Jesus and associating with those who are bowing down to false gods. That's an attitude that may have worked in isolated rural towns 100 years ago, but not anymore. In fact, today it borders on being un-American. One of the things I've grown up treasuring about the United States is, up until recently, its embrace of diversity. When I make a hospital call, it's not uncommon for me to interact with a South Asian surgeon, a Mexican anesthesiologist, a Nigerian nurse, and an Eastern European receptionist, potentially each of a different faith. My barbershop, owned by Russian Jews. The doctor who delivered my son Nat, a Zoroastrian from Iran. And up until the police shut it down, we had a tantric goddess temple in a house in our Arcadia neighborhood. A number of years ago, I was at a meeting of the Arizona Foundation for Contemporary Theology at the UCC headquarters in downtown Phoenix. At one point, we'd been discussing whether you pronounce sick, S-I-K-H, as seek or sick. Later, walking out to my car, I saw a man out on his evening walk. I thought to myself, ha-ha, there's someone who will know. Why? Because from his silhouette, his head was too big. He was wearing a turban. I walked briskly toward him and said, excuse me, sir, and he froze. I explained our dilemma, and after relaxing a bit in the knowledge that I wasn't going to mug him, he happily explained that it was sick in India and Sikh in the United States. We had a nice conversation and went our separate ways. Of course, you wouldn't hold it against a Sikh in Phoenix for being a bit jumpy when someone shouts at them and stops them in the street. The week after 9/11, Balbir Singh Sodhi, a Sikh gas station owner in Mesa, was assassinated by a so-called patriot whose unbalanced mental state allowed him to actually act on the hatred toward the other that the country was then wallowing in. In his book, God is Not a Christian, Bishop Desmond Tutu wrote, "Religion, which should encourage tolerance, respect, compassion, peace, reconciliation, caring, and sharing, has far too frequently, perversely, done the opposite. Religion has fueled alienation and conflict and has exacerbated intolerance and injustice and oppression. Some of the ghastliest atrocities have happened and are happening in the name of religion. It need not be so if we can learn the obvious, that no religion can hope to have a monopoly on God, on goodness and virtue and truth. God is not a Christian. To some, it still seems downright treasonous to renounce our monopoly on God and deal with other religions in a positive spirit. But the world is too small for people from different faiths to not get along with one another. Back in 2001, Harvard professor Diana Eck published a book, the truth of which helped motivate the rise of today's white Christian nationalists. In A New Religious America, How a Christian Country Has Become the World's Most Diverse Nation, she wrote that diversity describes a state of affairs, while pluralism represents an achievement based on an affirmation of diversity. To be pluralistic, there has to be self-conscious choice of promoting and accepting difference. Denying demographic realities and our own national motto of E Pluribus Unum, out of many, one, we are witness today to the influence of MAGA demonizing, prohibiting, and litigating against any acknowledgement of our culture's diverse and pluralistic reality. And it's not just about being American either. Dr. Eboo Patel, Muslim founder of the Interfaith Youth Corps, says, "The ability to engage diversity and build relationships amidst diversity is a central way in which we become fully human and, in fact, share in the divine nature." In his book, How to Be a Bad Christian, Dave Tomlinson recalls an invitation to officiate a wedding. While both were born and grew up in Britain, Amaka is half Nigerian, half Indian Christian, and Ansumana, a Muslim whose family is from Sierra Leone. They wanted a wedding jointly conducted by a priest and an imam. Both traditions were to be honored in the ceremony, both fully incorporated with no cheap compromises. Tomlinson wrote, "The day turned out to be a magnificent convergence of religions, cultures, families, and communities, with 300 guests comprising a rich and diverse community of assorted backgrounds, connections, viewpoints, and influences." Dave muses, "How I wished I could bottle the spirit of Amaka and Ansumana's wedding to release it across our world, torn apart with violence, prejudice, and terror, often in the name of religion. Yet I believe that this little event was simply a token of the aspiration of many people who loathe bigotry and intolerance and long for greater collaboration in creating peace on earth." Isn't that what we do each year at our Interfaith Thanksgiving service? Our token act that aspires to the idea that we can overcome bigotry and intolerance in healing the world. Hans Kung says, "There will be no peace among the nations without peace among the religions, and no peace among the religions without dialogue and greater understanding between them." Regardless of what faith we come from, the overwhelming majority of us simply desire to be decent human beings, don't we? Customs and rituals may not be the same. Our religious beliefs may vary. But humanity runs deeper than religion. Every religious tradition affirms in some way that God is beyond the grasp of any of us, a mystery, transcendent. So how could God be a Christian, or a Muslim, or a Jew, or a Hindu? God is not some tribal deity, but beyond our comprehension. When Muslims say, Allahu Akbar, an insecure hearer might hear, God is greater than your God, when in reality, Allahu Akbar is shorthand for God is greater than our understanding, greater than any human idea of the divine. Okay, then, what can you do? What can I do? The reality of global religious conflicts are way beyond any impact we can have, right? Well, let me close with a story. Back in 2010, the members of Heartsong Church, just outside Memphis, Tennessee, heard that a new Islamic center was being built right next door. So they put up a sign. Heartsong Church welcomes Memphis Islamic Center to the neighborhood. And when they heard that the center would not be ready in time for Ramadan, the pastor invited their neighbors to use the church for their prayers. In post-9/11 America, this made international news. And in a village in Kashmir, a group of Muslims saw the story on CNN and were so moved that they went straight to their local church and cleaned it inside and out. In a message to Heartsong's pastor, one of the Kashmiri men wrote, "We are trying now to be good neighbors too. Tell your congregation, we do not hate them, we love them. And for the rest of our lives, we are going to take care of that church." Although the Memphis Islamic Center is now complete, the two communities continue to work together every month to help the homeless in their neighborhood. And guess what? Heartsong Church is United Methodist. Friends, the future of humanity does not hinge on theological solutions, but on human solutions. Especially with blood fresh on our hands, we desperately need to create new stories of mutuality and hope that will generate respect and cooperation in building a more compassionate and sustainable world. That's why these words from Bishop Jack Spong need to be shouted from the rooftops. God is not a Christian. God is not a Jew or a Muslim or a Hindu or a Buddhist. All of those are human systems which human beings have created to try and help us walk into the mystery of God. I honor my tradition. I walk through my tradition, but I don't think my tradition defines God. I think it only points me toward God. In his Nobel Prize acceptance speech in 1964, Martin Luther King Jr. said, "We have inherited a great world house in which we have to live together, black and white, Easterner and Westerner, Gentile and Jew, Catholic and Protestant, Muslim and Hindu, a family unduly separated in ideas, cultures, and interest, who, because we can never again live without each other, must learn in this one big world to live with each other." And today, as missiles fly and economies teeter, we understand even more acutely the challenge of living together in this great world house. MLK's words ring more true than ever. we must learn to live together as brothers, or perish together as fools. Bob Marley had his own crazy idea. He believed that racism and hate could be cured by injecting music and love into people's lives. While rehearsing for a performance at a peace rally, gunmen broke into Marley's house and shot Marley, his wife, and his manager. But just 2 days later, despite having been shot in the chest and arm, a defiant Marley managed to walk out on stage and inspire 80,000 people to not give in to violence. Somebody asked him, "Why'd you do it?" He said, "The people who are trying to make this world worse are not taking a day off. How can I?" In times of fear, violence, and uncertainty, when comfortable landmarks are shifting or have disappeared, it's understandable that people long for familiarity and straightforward answers. But the future depends on those of us who know that God is not a Christian, and who, with Peter, can clothe ourselves with humility in our dealings with one another, and who can reclaim and revive our commitment to diversity and pluralism. We can uphold our own faith while simultaneously affirming the faith of others, and for the sake of all people everywhere, work together to spread a global culture of respect, friendship, justice, and compassion, with no time to take a day off. Be well.
Hey, if you liked what you heard today, buy me a coffee.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.